Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Greetings from sunny California, everyone. This is Nick Rigoretti, and this is episode 41 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. Our guest this week is head honcho of Grappling Industries. It's David Aguzzi. Super cool guy. He's got some cool stories. Before we get into the actual show, I just want to remind you guys to please support our sponsors. The first one is my own private jiu-jitsu online dojo. It's called The Master Academy. I put a huge amount of focus and work into this, and I really believe it's one of the best online resources for improving your jiu-jitsu. Not only are there a whole bunch of lessons on jiu-jitsu, but we also have exclusive podcasts for members that you can't hear anywhere else. And if you want to become a member of the Master Academy, just head on over to jiu-jitsu-master-academy.com and make sure to use the coupon code podcast, and you'll get 10% off any of the membership options. Our next sponsor is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. So you guys know my brand is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. It stands for camaraderie and fellowship within jiu-jitsu, and we have some of the coolest designed rash guards, gis, belts, t-shirts, hoodies, just awesome jiu-jitsu stuff, and some online learning materials for jiu-jitsu, including books and videos. If you head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrotherhood.com and use the coupon code podcast again at checkout, you'll get 10% off anything in the store. And finally, for those of you in the UK, if you're interested in trying CBD oil for its benefits regarding reducing inflammation and increasing relaxation, head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the coupon code JJBTruth, and you'll get 10 quid off any of their fantastic CBD-based products. Okay, guys, here we go. Episode 41, David Aguzzi. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I have a very cool dude with me today. His name is David Aguzzi, and he is in Montreal, Canada. David is the brainchild behind what I consider to be one of the most exciting competition series in jiu-jitsu today. It's Grappling Industries. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, my great pleasure. So, my man, you just got your black belt, by the way, which I want to say congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been a while.
It's been a while, right? Like, how long did it take you to get that black belt?
From start to finish, it took 17 years.
Damn. Okay. But you're still a very young man, so, I mean...
Yes. Almost 30 now, like 30 years old.
So you're training since you were 13?
Yeah, I started because my brother got me interested, and I just fell in love with it.
Uh-huh. And your bro didn't continue, it was just you, right?
Yeah, it was just me, you know, he stuck around for a year, but he got more interested in other stuff. But I always was more athletic, one playing hockey and stuff. Uh-huh. When I found jiu-jitsu, it was for me, so I just continued on.
That's cool.
He went separate.
And he's your older brother, right?
Yeah, he's 7 years older.
Okay, so now
I wanted to do whatever he did, right?
That's cool. And now you can basically beat the crap out of him whenever you want to.
Yeah, but that's not the point.
Yeah, David, so like you, it's my understanding that you trained at the TriStar gym, or am I mistaken with that?
When I'm in Montreal, I train at TriStar. But as of late, I've just been traveling so much around the world that I train at so many different gyms and get to see like so many different professors' way of teaching and enrolling their students when I get an opportunity.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. I think when you're going to different academies all the time, it actually it really does help your jiu-jitsu, because you cannot, I've mentioned before, your game can't get stale from going against the same opponents. You're always exposed to new different styles and techniques and like personalities, and I think it's really, really good for your jiu-jitsu. So that's why I always recommend that everyone, if they can, take like some kind of a jiu-jitsu pilgrimage somewhere, like maybe go spend some time in Japan or Brazil, or if you go on holiday somewhere, always try to visit the local academies, because it can do nothing but good things for your jiu-jitsu. I'm guessing you would agree, and you've experienced that as well.
I would agree, absolutely. Like, just recently, we went down the West Coast, and we spent 3 months training every day at a different gym in the morning and a different gym at night. And the entire experience, we learned so much just from how different gyms in different areas train, or how different regions train, or how a certain affiliation would train, curriculums versus strategies. It was just very intriguing.
That's cool. Dave, can I ask you to just move a little bit closer to the microphone, please?
Hello.
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's better. Okay, cool, Dave. So I wanted to ask you, you are one of the few people who are making a really good living and who have built a really great business in jiu-jitsu, and that is Grappling Industries. I remember meeting you, I think it must be going on close to 4 years ago in Montreal. I came up there to do a project with you, and I think you were just starting out at that point. I remember you had maybe done a few shows, but you were just starting out. Is that correct?
Yeah, we had only been doing events, tournaments in Canada at the time, and we had just started doing something in Australia as far as tournaments as well. But at the time, it was pretty much maybe me and someone else.
Okay.
It wasn't the infrastructure, the number of employees. Of course, it is now. But yeah, I do remember that, of course, much. I really do remember that. Like, yeah, it was almost like a starting out phase where you've proven an idea, but now it's like you want to take it a step further. And that was kind of like where I was at the time, where mm-hmm. I felt like I was an amateur, but I wanted to become a professional. Uh-huh. And I had lots of people around me who were professionals that maybe I should start taking their advice about certain things mm-hmm. and actually do research and study work.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I mean, now how many, it's grown to something pretty big. How many different venues do you have, or how many different competitions do you run throughout the year?
Well, I think right now we are in 4 countries. We just added the UK incorporation not too long ago. We're about to finish the work permits and all the behind the work, behind the scenes, like legal and accounting work in the UK. Mm-hmm. And we're about to launch at the end of the year there. So that makes our 4th country. And we're also looking to add Mexico and France in early next year. So that would be the 5th and 6th countries. Right now we're in about 50 cities. We're in a lot of cities in the United States. I think right now, this year, we're producing about 85 to 90 tournaments in those countries. As far as frequency, I think it's only second to the IBJJF. As far as frequency, as far as number of countries, of course, IBJJF and the UAE are the large ones. They're very international. But I think what we've done as far as gone to so many cities that have very few tournaments, giving them a real platform to compete. Mm-hmm. We're not just building our tournament, but we're also, in a way, building the scenes, because we're bringing tournaments there for the competitors who no longer have to travel 6 to 10 hours to compete finally. And as well, we're developing referees in those cities so that there's a better understanding about any sort of rules in jiu-jitsu.
That's great. I remember that was the project you and I worked on, was that video about the rules. And even I, as like, I've been a black belt for 5 years. When we started getting into it, I realized I didn't really even know the rule sets very well. And I guess that's one of the big things that you deal with Grappling Industries is, you know, there's people coming and competing and then they complain because they got disqualified because they didn't know the rules properly. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think when you look at any sport in the world, the rules are pretty simple, you know, like for example, in soccer or hockey, it's put the object in the net, same thing with basketball, and that racks up points. But in jiu-jitsu, it's just very complicated as far as what points equal, because every organization has a different one. So it's very hard for parents or kids or newcomers to actually get used to the rules right away. And in a way, it also makes it complicated to referee it. So it's very complicated in our sport. The actual sport, jiu-jitsu part of it, is actually super complicated once you get to the rules and the mm-hmm. scoring aspect. And then you include submissions that you're allowed or not allowed to do at different ranks. The whole thing is kind of a messy situation.
Mm-hmm. So what's the, in your opinion, you've obviously been doing this for a while. I remember I did... I've run one competition in my life. It was the South African National Grappling Championships in, I think, 2001 or 2002. And I just said to myself, never again, like the logistical headache. It wasn't for me. But I wanted to ask you, now that you've got all this experience under your belt and you've done, I'm guessing it's in the hundreds now, What do you think differentiates a well-run grappling tournament from a poorly run grappling tournament?
Well, there's a lot of things to take into consideration there. Like a lot of people, when they promote their first event, to get people to compete against each other, it usually takes place in their local gym, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd invite everyone to my gym that I train at, and we'd have a competition. That really turns away a lot of people, of course. So what I think is that having a bigger venue is usually really nice. It creates an atmosphere for that competition if there's a venue. And then there's the production aspect of it. Does it look like it's something special that you're partaking in that day? And then there's everything else from the whole, like how well run is the tournament. Do they actually know how to run a tournament? Do they know how to answer questions? Do brackets make sense? And then, of course, what becomes the most complicated thing in the tournament industry is how do you brand your tournament? Why do people choose your tournament over other people's tournament? There's a lot of things that make a tournament good.
And what do you think makes grappling industries special or better?
For grappling industries, what makes it special compared to like the IBJJF or the UAE, who are also great tournaments, is that grappling industries is round robin, which means when you compete at grappling industries, if you lose your first match, you're not eliminated altogether. Uh-huh. You'll also get to other competitors in your division. It's like any international sport where there's pools. So you get pulled together with several competitors. You get to compete against each other. You get a record, and then we go into a playoff afterward with the other pools. This way, we run gauntlets. We actually get experience as well. So something you're seeing at grappling industries is the number of white belts and blue belts is bigger than IBJJF in a lot of cities. IBJJF is huge at purple, brown, and black belt, but white belts and blue belts love the round robin setting, and just people. In general, just find it a better bang for your buck that you could do gi and no gi and possibly get 8 matches instead of possibly getting 2 to 4 matches made. Those kind of things make huge differences. And of course, on the back end, we have to be able to run such a tournament because there's so many more matches to run in the day. But if my job is to run a tournament, then I don't care how many matches I run that day, as long as the competitors are super happy with the product, of course. Okay. And I noticed that for us, the round robin thing, that you're coming to our tournament and you're getting to fight several competitors instead of just one. That's a huge difference, man.
Yeah, that does make a big difference. I mean, I remember having traveled when I was living in England, and I'd travel like to the north of the country to fight in a comp, and I'd lose the first match. And I'd be like, damn, I mean, that was my whole weekend.
And it happened to me. It happened to me too. I've traveled 6 to 10 hours, gone to a tournament and lost the first match, and that's it. I'm eliminated, and that it's not a gi and no gi day. It's just a gi day, you know. So that's it. I go home now, and I paid all that money. I trained all that for one fight, and I know a lot of people like that type of pressure and stuff, and that's a really cool single elimination. I appreciate it too, but I think for a lot of people. And a lot of people in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu are not full-time competitors. They're just avid practitioners who just want to test themselves at tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to a tournament and you get eliminated, they don't really like that. They don't like the experience of it. They don't feel they got anything out of it. They go back to the gym, like, well, I spent $100 and I lost a match and that's it.
But yeah.
When you come to at least grappling industries and you fight 4, 5, 6, 7 times that day, they feel like they got something, so they go back to their job, but they feel like they did this really cool activity for a day on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of people are actually looking for.
Mm, that's interesting. So we've spoken about what differentiates a well-run competition from a badly run one, but I guess you've been around enough competitors and athletes now that you probably have a good idea of what you think makes a good competitor, or even what you think makes a good team. Have you noticed any common elements amongst the best competitors or the best teams? I'm guessing preparation is obviously one of them. I mean, you don't want to be that guy that arrives knowing nothing about the rule set, or, you know, your gi isn't correct. So I'm guessing preparation is one of them, but are there any other things you've noticed?
I think, like, clearly as far as competitors, it's all about the preparation. Like, are they a full-time competitor? Like, you're seeing the best competitors in the world now. Like, take an example of, like, Gordon Ryan. Like, if you like him or you don't like him, you have to respect his work effort, you know? He's in the gym all day. He's training all day. He wants to be the best. He wants to win every tournament if he goes to. So he's always learning. He's always trying to get better. He's always training on everything. Compared to the people who don't really do that much jiu-jitsu, or don't really, they just want to go to a tournament and see what it's like. So at that point, you're going to see that the Gordon Ryans or the Felipe Pandas or even the Roger Gracies are so much better than everyone because they take it steps beyond everybody else, you know. Same thing with the gyms. It goes the exact same way with the gyms where you see a gym like Atos or you see like a gym like Gracie Baja or the Main Alliance gym or the GF teams. Like their actual competitive training sessions are really well versed and they bring a lot of world-class guys onto the same mat and they work towards a goal. I think that's one thing between the gyms and the competitors is they seek out other people to draw each other towards their goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
It's like you surround yourself with people who also want to succeed. It's the same thing in entrepreneurship, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to surround yourself with people who want the same thing as you.
Agreed. Now that makes total sense. So you look, I've been to maybe 40 or 50 jiu-jitsu competitions in my life, and I've seen a few interesting things. Like the classic is walking into the bathrooms and there's a guy standing at the urinal taking a piss without flip-flops on, and he's in his gi, so you know he's about to go compete. I wanted to ask you, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen at one of these comps that you've run?
I don't know, man. It's stuff like that is exactly like the type of stuff you'd expect to see at least once a tournament, even though you announce it on a microphone. You know, I think that the craziest stuff is always like someone's emotions are running high, you know,
mm-hmm.
either a coach's emotions or a competitor's emotions. And then sometimes a referee's emotions will get high because of their emotions that they're being yelled at. I think that's always the craziest stuff. Like, crazy stuff is not supposed to happen, you know what I mean?
Have any fights broken out at any of your events?
We've never had an actual fight yet at an event. We've had actually some close calls. And I mean, I can't deny that. Once you run enough events, these types of things are bound to happen from a statistic standpoint, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are going to get hurt eventually rolling. And people are also going to get into emotional arguments. One time at a Toronto tournament, a referee and a coach almost got into a fight, but it didn't escalate to that point happily enough. But yeah, I think emotional aspects of coaches, referees, and competitors is mm-hmm. where we see the crazy aspects come out in the tournament setting.
Uh-huh. What are your thoughts on what are you doing to try to push the boundaries when it comes to, like, making grappling competitions progressive? I know my friend in the UK, Daniel Strauss, he runs Kleos, and what they do is they play music and they kind of have like MCs, and like they try to make it like a fun day out that's kind of not so serious as the traditional models. Are you doing anything like that you or have you got plans to do anything like that just make it like a little bit different or a little bit more progressive?
We've continued to work on our production more and more and more, like to make it like better looking so that when you show up, it doesn't look like you're entering something sloppy or unthought of.
Mm-hmm.
So that this way you enter there and you look like, hey, these guys thought out what this should look like. We just joined up with SmoothConf from Europe as well, from Sweden, so that we would have a very progressive schedule and bracket, big screens and many things that at the event would delete a lot of the questions of competitors about mm-hmm. their schedule, bracket, or where they're skiing.
I just had an idea. I mean, that's probably something you've already thought of, but have you ever considered having like some kind of app where you would sign in and you could pay your entry fee, and then it would like your bracket information would be there and it would give you alerts as to when you need to be near the mat or something like that?
Pretty much in that change we just did this week, actually, on Monday, to Smooth Comp. This is all now available. So if you go on your phone the morning of the tournament, the days before the tournament, you'll see your brackets, you'll see your name, you'll see, if you check your name, you'll see the time of all your fights, and it'll be live updated. Like, the entire system is as progressive as it gets, and I think by us incorporating that into our tournament, we just launched our tournament up, like, levels and levels and levels of professionalism that you don't see that much in jiu-jitsu. As far as stuff like playing music in the background, we do that at a lot of our tournaments already, since we have our own PA systems now. We're trying to play music in the background that cuts when we're actually on the microphones ourselves. You know, of course, we have our own t-shirt stand now with many of our sponsors. We synced up to make our own t-shirt stand at events, so there's a merchandise aspect to it. We're trying to get more food sponsors to add that cafe setting to our events as well. We're adding pictures and video, so there's more content after the tournament, because people love content after tournaments. They love pictures of themselves. They love video of themselves. We're trying to add that as well. But yeah, I mean, I just went to Disney last week, and when you go to Disneyland, right, you go to all these little shows, like the Festival of Lion King, and when you go to these types of things, you kind of see that there's a fun aspect that can be created in an event atmosphere as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was really inspired by going to Disney. I've been trying to think of how I can incorporate so many amazing ideas from Disneyland into jiu-jitsu tournaments. I know it sounds silly, but Disneyland makes an event atmosphere better than anyone, such as like Cirque du Soleil, for example, WWF. So I'm looking at other event promoters and the amazing things they do to make jiu-jitsu tournaments as well fun and amazing themselves. That they're not.
Yeah, I think that's great.
You know, too many people look at jiu-jitsu as like niche, but it's becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm, actually.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the idea that you're looking for ways to make it more fun, I absolutely love that, David, because that was one of the reasons. Funny enough, I was with Josh Griffith, who runs Clockwork Jiu-Jitsu in New York. Such a lovely man. He's a previous guest on the show, and I just saw him a couple of weeks ago in New York. And we were talking about tournaments, and he said, look, I teach 25 classes a week or 25 hours a week, and I train a lot, and I look after my students. But one thing I just don't do is I don't go to competitions. He was like, I did enough of them in my day when I was a competitor, and I just don't like the atmosphere. I don't like the vibe. And I almost wanted to give him a hug, because I'd been wanting someone to feel the same way as I do, because that's exactly how I feel. Like, going to a jiu-jitsu tournament is literally one of the worst things I can possibly think of doing. And one of the reasons is it's the atmosphere. I always am reminded when I'm in the, I mean, when I compete, I remember, like, you would go into that kind of like, especially with IBJJF, there's a kind of like bullpen area where you're waiting to be called for your match after the weigh-in. And I always thought that it reminded me, I thought, this is what it must be like in a slaughterhouse when these cattle are waiting in this little pen to be slaughtered, because there's just this like smell of fear and anxiety and all the stress hormones. And dudes are like screaming, and like other dudes are jumping, and like, it's just... Oh, dude, it's just not my idea of a good time, and I've got no interest in it. So I think if you can take the edge off that with making people realize that, you know, 99% of them are not going to be the next Gordon Ryan. They're not going to make a living competing in jiu-jitsu. They're just there to have a good time and test themselves. And if you can foster that kind of atmosphere, I think, I mean, it sounds like a tournament I'd want to attend.
So that's actually really interesting that you bring that up, because that touches on like two things, right? Like I was saying, most people are not going to be serious competitors at a jiu-jitsu tournament. They have real jobs, they have real careers. There's doctors, there's lawyers, there's teachers, there's students. There's all these sorts of different people competing in jiu-jitsu, like they are participating at the gym in jiu-jitsu. So a lot of these people don't actually care if they win or lose. They're actually there for experience and to see how they do that day. To them, it's like a very important hobby that day. They want to see how they do. And at the same time, I think the round robin atmosphere really helps that, because it gets the edge off after the first fight. And now you're like, okay, I did it now. Now I can do it again. And now you have to. So you have to test yourself a couple more times, and it really cuts that edge off a little bit, where you're going into that first fight a little tense, of course, like you described, which absolutely exists regardless of competition or format. But when you get to the second fight, I've heard that a lot of people at our tournament in the round robin setting, they get rid of that edge because they've gone through it. It's like if you were in an MMA fight and the first round was over, now there's a second round. A little bit of the adrenaline has gone away.
That's very interesting. So have you ever seen the movie Red Belt by David Mamet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it came out, I think, very close to 7 or 8 years ago now. Fantastic film. It didn't get the critical praise or the commercial success it deserves, but David Mamet is a very accomplished filmmaker, and Red Belt is about a jiu-jitsu instructor in Los Angeles who is approached by a fight promoter to put together this tournament, and he has a very interesting plan, the jiu-jitsu instructor, or an interesting and original idea, which is where the fighters, they draw like straws or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the mechanic was, but the loser in the straw drawing would have to have a major handicap. Like one of them was, I think he had his hand tied behind his back, or something like that. And I always thought that was a really original way to think about competition. Like if you did something really way out there, have you ever considered doing something like that?
Well, you know, like it's almost similar to combat jiu-jitsu in a way, right? Where you add an extra aspect to it.
Uh-huh. Can you explain?
Like, I don't know. Like, I haven't really thought of changing jiu-jitsu. Like, as far as the tournament way, you mean? Or as far as training?
Okay, so it's just the thought. I mean, again, this is not, it's not my business, so it would be easy for me to say, oh, you should do this. And meanwhile, I don't know what goes into, I don't know how difficult it is to implement something like this. But, you know, like perhaps at one of the competitions, you could have an exhibition, which is you take three, you could do like a little invitational thing where you take three of the top fighters, maybe Gordon Ryan and two others. And then you say, okay, we're going to run a slightly different rule set. You're going to, in a similar way to what EBI has done, you know, the way when you get to the end of the overtime, then you go into the spider web or something like that. But instead of doing that, you could say, okay, one guy has to wear a blindfold and you start in a clinch, or one guy has to fight with his hand behind his back for the first round, or something like that. Just do these really like different kind of exciting things that might generate some interest. It's just a thought that I've been playing around with.
No, I haven't really played around with those thoughts in particular. Like, I don't really want to change the sports rules more than it's been changed already. Mm-hmm. Like, I, those ideas are really good for, like, stuff like EBI or the invitationals or the super fights. But right now, I think when you're incorporating, like, 500 to 1,000 competitors in a tournament, you can't really expect to, like, change the rules that much. Mm-hmm. The masses won't appreciate it. Like, someone like me and you would appreciate seeing Gordon Ryan fight with his hands behind his back.
Uh-huh.
I've seen, like, there's a YouTube video of a guy entering an absolute division at someone's tournament. It wasn't mine, but he put a blindfold on.
Okay.
And he fought everyone in absolute with a blindfold.
Wow. Did he win?
He got third.
Okay.
I mean, there's a highlight video online. You should check
that out. Yeah, I will definitely check that out. That sounds interesting as hell.
Some people would also say it's disrespectful to the opponent, you know what I
mean?
Yeah. That he actually did that he wouldn't take them that seriously.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
People would think it's interesting that he actually won matches.
Uh-huh.
But as far as implementing it into the tournament, like I was saying, like when you're dealing with the masses, it's really complicated. Like every change has to be kind of smaller.
Uh-huh.
Once you're dealing with bigger and bigger audiences, like I can only make smaller and smaller changes at a moment. Uh-huh. Because every small change I make, I have to educate everybody about. So to just make a tournament where I'm saying, like, okay, at the end of the match, if it's a draw, what we're going to do is we're going to create a handicap.
Okay.
Then the education of that, or the actual hope and praise from everyone on that handicap, it becomes really complicated.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about, David, is something that a good friend of mine, one of my black belts, and just generally a super intelligent, super interesting guy. His name's Joey Best. He trains out in Florida. I wanted to get him on the show, but he's very media shy. So yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
he made a very interesting point. And I don't know if it's something that you really need to be concerned about with the format of grappling industries, but I think things like EBI, it might start to creep in. He said to me, basically, if you look at WWF, right, the WWF now is basically totally fake. I mean, no one would argue that that is a real... Don't get me wrong, it requires a lot of athleticism and a lot of coordination and a lot of, you know, just general presence and ability. And it's not easy, but it's not a sporting competition. But if you trace that back to 100 years ago, and some people would argue not even 100 years ago, it was catch-as-catch-can wrestling, which was a legit submission. It was basically submission grappling. And your objective was to try to hook or submit the opponent. And then the works started to enter into it. Like two guys would say, okay, look, this competition's got $200 prize money. If you and I meet in the final, I'll tell you what, you can submit me with a guillotine and then we'll just split the $100 each. And Joey is convinced that that is what's going to happen to competitive grappling. Is in particular not the tournaments such as the ones you run, but the more like package shows such as things like, as I mentioned, EBI. He said eventually you were going to see that they will just come full circle and they themselves will turn into WWF style events. What are your thoughts on that?
That's like the type of question that I really would want like a whole day to think about, you know, because that's a pretty deep question. There's a lot to really think about it. Like there's so many algorithms of how certain situations play out. I think EBI is trying to keep one member of every team in a tournament only. So this way there's no teams closing out or, you know, potential like maybe an ADCC seeing Jean-Jacques Machado tap out Pan Pano in like 5 seconds, so that they claim the fastest submission award.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the example Joey used is he said, like, if you looked at ADCC, one of the early ones where there was a...
Matthews.
I don't even think he used the Matthews example. It was Henzo Gracie and Marcio Fatoza. He claims that they threw that match because the fastest submission would get a Rolex. So Marcio Fatoza just ran in with his head down and Enzo slapped a guillotine on. I don't know if that is true. Yeah. I'm not making that claim. It was something interesting to think about.
So there's that example. There's also the example of Matt Hughes and Jeremy Horn in their fight, of course. They tried to go for the biggest takedown and the fastest submission.
Okay.
And also Pedro Pano versus Jean-Jacques Machado is also a very questionable one as well. So, yeah, I think... you have to prevent teammates from fighting each other. That's the one thing that WWF makes such a great spectacle of it, is that one of the baby faces turns heel and it turns into a massive rivalry, right? We can prevent that in jiu-jitsu by not having teammates fight. That's one of the shitty things in jiu-jitsu and MMA, though, unlike in boxing, is that jiu-jitsu and MMA is such a team sport because you need these people to train with. And you're not making enough money in like Conor McGregor or Mike Tyson or these guys to bring in training partners all the time that you need everyone else to train with. So when you guys move up the rankings, like you become like at one point, remember when Matt Hughes was number one and Robbie Lawler was the gatekeeper in the UFC?
I remember that, yeah.
But Robbie Lawler can't fight Matt Hughes for the title because they're best friends and teammates. Uh-huh. So, or Rashad Evans and John Jones, for example, like that was happening. It creates those types of problems. As far as getting to the WWF level, I don't know. I think at that point you need real script writing. Uh-huh. As long as there's a competitive edge to something and there's the glory of winning that's not scripted, I think people won't script it themselves by calling, hey, let's split the 10 grand or go 5 grand each, you know, because it's not about the money at that point. They want to win. Like a person like Gordon Ryan doesn't care if he wins or loses the money, he'd rather win. And that goes back to that, that's where jiu-jitsu is going to become a sport, where WWF is not a sport, is that whole script writing to it.
Fair enough. It's a valid opinion. David, my brother, very cool talking to you. If the people who are listening want to compete
inner grappling industries event or just find out more about it and maybe go check one of them out, where should they go to find out more?
It's grapplingindustries.com.
Okay, great. And you guys have Facebook as well?
We have Facebook. It's also Grappling Industries. We also have a big group on Facebook of like 12,000 members also on Facebook. That's called Grappling Industries. And we have an Instagram that we've started playing with that's starting to build up as well.
That's cool.
Also Grappling Industries.
That's great. Well, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to as well say to you, you're doing something really cool. I know it cannot have been easy to go up against the big existing players like the IBJJF and the UAE, which both at the point that you started already had massive followings and massive budgets. And for the fact that you have managed to create something that definitely has a following, I keep hearing more and more about Grappling Industries and seeing more and more about it. And just to remember back to the day when it was basically a few small tournaments and I was chatting to you in Canada and I could see you had the drive and the vision and you went out and made it happen. And I think that's very, very cool. I just wanted to give you respect and props for that.
Thank you, man. If I could, I want to give a shout out to the employees that I have. I have like 10 employees now, and they all do a role that it's like, I need someone to do a specific role, and each of them, I believe, do it so amazingly. Mm-hmm. And I think I can't do it by myself. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. I need these people, and I have to continue to praise these people because they complete the entire thing, from the advertising team to the logistics team to the deliverable. There's marketing and a deliverable team, and they both do an amazing job. And like, just to have them as my coworkers and on my team, it means the world to me. And they allow me to do more and more work. They allow me to implement more and more expansion. And being able to be responsible and liable for these people, it means a lot to me, actually.
Yeah, that's very cool. You remind me of... you know, that's an interesting thing. I remember watching this is something I recommend to everyone who hasn't seen it. There's a gentleman by the name of Eben Pagan, who goes by another name, David D'Angelo, and he had a program out called On Being a Man, which was all about how to help your transition to manhood from like adolescence, because a lot of us haven't gone through it properly. There's no rite of passage, and hence a lot of us never psychologically become integrated as grown up men. And very interesting program, and he would talk about very, very interesting things. And when one of the things he said, he was talking about the musician Sting, and how Sting would always, like, he'd be playing on stage and then he would like make the spotlight go on his drummer or his backup guitarist or other members of the band. Because And someone once asked him, why do you do that? And he said, like, you know, the better I make these people look and the more credit I give them and the more thanks I give them, the better they play and the better everything sounds and the better everything is. And I think it's very similar to what you've just done there by giving props to the people who work for you and admitting that you can't do it alone. That says a lot about you. Very, very cool.
I think I want them to be the faces of this. You know, I'm becoming more and more the behind the scenes face. And I think they should become the faces, because they're the people who are present and really showing their face and really making those connections and pushing everything for us. And at the same time, like Sting was saying, you know, they produce better work. You should pay them more. Everyone on the team should be happy. And once you can create that type of utopia in the workplace, it's quite amazing the amount of work and ideas that can be created. It's just amazing, to be honest.
Well, cool, Dave. Peace out, dude. And I'll come check out one of the tournaments as well. Hope to see you there.
I'll see you in the UK, Nick.
Okay. Later, buddy.
David is a really cool guy, and his story is so inspiring. You know, when I met him, like, close to 5 years ago, I liked him a lot and I thought he was funny and had a good sense of humor, but my main impression of him is that he was just a shy kid. And to see that he has gone on to create this huge business, this huge successful business, and provide a lot of value to the grappling community is just so impressive to me. And as I've mentioned before, this industry is very competitive and it's not necessarily easy to make a living. And to see that he's done so and done it in such a professional manner is very, very inspiring. David's a solid dude, and he just got his black belt as well. So congratulations to him on that. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode. go check out Master Academy, my online membership site. It's what I believe to be a very, very cool and high value product that's going to help your jiu-jitsu as well. So head on over to jiu-jitsumasteracademy.com and check that out. Until next week, peace out.